It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 286 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I talk with comic creators Brandon Gary and Jason Bienvenu. They have worked together on a couple of projects that I really like. I got to meet them at a recent convention, and I really enjoy Dusk and the Kingdom. And they play a little different roles depending on the book, but they make a great team and have created these great books with more to come. We talk about how they work together and about what the different books are about, as well as how you can access them. There's also an important Kickstarter going on for The Kingdom, so I encourage you to help bring this project home on the 20th, Tuesday, only a couple of days away. One word of warning, sometimes Skype fritzes out a little bit when Jason's talking, but if you turn the volume up, I'm sure you'll understand what he's saying. They've got a lot of great things to say and great projects to talk about, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Brandon Gary and Jason Bienvenu, the creators of a couple of great books, one called Dusk and another one called The Kingdom. Let's start off with you, Brandon. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing well. And Jason, how about you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
It's good to talk with you. I always ask people individually so people know whose voice it is after this, who's speaking. So we're going to start with the Dusk, which I just got a hold of recently because it came out through Comixology in trade form, the first six issues. Brendan, why don't you talk a little bit about Dusk, and then we'll get to Jason about the artwork of it. Where did the concept come? Why don't you give us the TV Guide update first, and then where did you get the concept? Was this something you and Jason worked on together? How does that happen?
So the story of Dusk is that it takes place on this planet that's not spinning or moving or rotating at all. It's completely motionless in space, and so one side's always blasted by the sun, the other side's always dark and cold. And there's this habitable strip that runs around the planet where it's not too hot, not too cold, and that's where they built the city, and they named it Dusk because it's that time all the time. And so the city goes from light to dark within just a couple of miles, and in the lighter areas, it's a lot more vacation-y, but as you get deeper into the city, it gets darker, people are getting sick more often, there's a lot more crime, just kind of, it's a seedier area. And there's these two sisters who live in that, near that seedier area, and they kind of get wrapped up in all that crime. There's kids disappearing, people dying mysteriously, ancient alien artifacts being uncovered, and ultimately they have to figure out how all these things tie together and how they're going to survive. And the fate of the planet is in the hands of a teenage girl. And to answer how we came up with it, Jason and I just kind of brainstormed about things that we thought would be cool and things we hadn't seen, and we kind of landed on this planet that didn't spin, and then it was kind of worked backwards from there, like why doesn't it spin and why doesn't it move in space, and then like the story built up around there. So
Pretty cool. I read it and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great story. And let's talk about the art real briefly, Jason. You're probably more involved in the art, like what the people look like and what the city and stuff looks like and the different levels.
I think one of the things that Brandon was a little on the fence about when we first started, I wanted to give the readers a visual representation of where the story was taking place in the city without relying so much on exposition. So what I proposed was having these really vivid, wild colors that would instantly let the reader know not only where the story is at, or where the story is taking place at in the city, but also, you know, have a nice stylized look that someone that might not be very into indie comics or familiar with us would see at our convention or at a booth or something and flip through it and get instantly engaged by something that isn't necessarily really seen a lot in comics.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. I mean, I got that real easily. I could tell what was where everywhere. As I turned the pages, I could tell exactly what was going on. And, of course, you set this up real nicely by explaining what's where early on in the first issue, which I thought was a great way to do it. So, you know, hats off to you guys doing that.
Thank you very much. We were very deliberate. We had the whole six issues written. This was my first comic book that I worked on, and Jason had done the Kingdom beforehand, and so like I didn't know the proper way to do everything. So he and I worked together on a lot of things, and like again, just kind of brainstormed on what would be the best way to get this part across and make sure that people weren't confused for the rest of this story or things like that. So thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I thought it was really good. Now, as far as the individuals and the likenesses of the folks, Jason, did you base them on anybody, or were they something that you kind of had an idea when you guys talked about them, already had a picture in your head of what they look like? How did you come up with the images of what the people look like?
We kind of picked and chose little elements of certain people that we thought might stand out. And what Brandon and I tried to focus on was having each character recognizable whenever they're in silhouette, because of the way the lighting and stuff would function. We wanted to have that option in case they're, you know, really dramatically lit and whatnot. So another thing that whenever we develop characters, we wanted the reader to kind of get a sense of what the person was and what their background might have been just at a first glance. So we took a lot of cues from kind of Blade Runner and stuff as far as like the detectives went, and some of the villains have more just kind of basic boiler suits and mixed between military outfits and hoodies that kind of let you know that, you know, they might have had a military or like a soldier for hire background, but not necessarily coming out and saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the general idea around the character looks,
mm-hmm.
or the character design.
Now talk about Brandon, and I guess both of you are involved with this, but Brandon, I'll ask you, talk about the different characters, because you got, at the beginning, you got two sets of two characters going on. You got two detectives and the two sisters kind of, they kind of balance against each other as the story goes along. Do you want to talk about the development of those characters?
Yeah. So the sisters, when I was writing it, I was like, I feel like there's, I don't know. I just felt like the story needed to be girls. It wasn't like a choice, like a political choice in any way. It was just sort of, oh, I think this works better than to have a cast of all boys. So I was like, this is more interesting that this is a girl that ends up in having these things happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
And for the detectives, it was kind of, it went from being like my first time writing, where I was kind of writing people a little bit, I don't want to say cliche, but I was relying on some tropes, and so I kind of went through and tried to take some of those out and switch them around. And after I had written it, I looked at it again and tried to see how I could make things less obvious as far as like what was going to end up happening and things like that, and what you would expect this character to be, a good guy or a bad guy. And I felt like I wanted to have it be a surprise even for me. Even though I was writing, if I were to read it and not write it, what would surprise me? So anything that I was like, oh, this is what should happen, I'll be like, all right, how can I make that not happen and make it still make sense? So.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, you started to say something. I didn't quite hear you. What were you saying?
You know, I don't even recall. It couldn't have been that important.
Okay. Okay. Let's talk about the cityscapes and the different parts of it, Jason, and how you put those together visually. Did you base those on like real life places, or was that something in your imagination that came up?
You know, the idea that Brandon and I kind of had was, you know, at first the oldest part of the city was kind of built in that Goldilocks zone, and it was kind of like that that old Main Street that you think about, like Middle America, old Main Street type thing. And then the richer, more opulent people started kind of encroaching, which were closer, a little closer to the warmer zone, where they had these big giant skyscrapers that kind of even more emphasized the shadows of the, you know, the less opulent areas and even the industrial areas. So whenever it came to kind of futuristic looking buildings, I took a lot of references from Tokyo and from Hong Kong and Dubai and a couple of other cities in the Middle East that have really brand new cities that are really futuristic looking. And then kind of when we got in the middle, then I started looking at, you know, Russian skyscrapers and some of the skyscrapers in England, which are a little bit older, mm-hmm. and even if they aren't that much older, they have like a different design sense to it. So we wanted to feel real organic, like the city hadn't just popped up overnight, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, now the trade paperback's out, and you've got the first six issues. And then my understanding is, how much does the first issue cost if you go to Comixology, Brandon?
Let me see. I think it's $2.99.
Okay.
Maybe less.
Okay.
Yeah,
and that's a really thick issue. It's 37 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, all the single issues are $2.99, mm-hmm. and then the full trade paperback is $14.99. So I think that saves you a little bit.
Okay, and this comes out from Southbound Press. Is that your guys' company? Is that what it is?
That was we can't. I tried to change it. We're calling ourselves Spiro Studios.
Okay.
And Southbound was sort of a thing. We were like, yeah, we're going to do this. And then we decided not to when it was a little too late to change it.
We basically needed something to upload. They wanted some sort of name for to allow us to upload to Comixology. And mm-hmm. we basically came up with some sort of placeholder thinking that we'd be able to, you know, edit it in the future, and like Brandon said, we couldn't edit it, but we are Spiro Studios now.
Okay, well, that's Spero. Is that what it is?
Correct.
Correct.
Okay, good. Because I always try to get people's names and stuff spelled right, because people go onto the internet and they look for Spiro. They may not find you guys, so we want to.
Correct.
I'm going to get people in the right direction. So let's talk about the trade. Now, I met you guys at Comic Palooza, and I really liked your stuff. And I wanted to make sure that people know how to get your books. As far as Dusk goes now, is it through, can you get it in Diamond? How do you get Dusk as things progress?
Well, for right,
we're gonna submit to Diamond eventually, but I'm kind of walking over Brandon, so I'll let him say what our plans are.
So for right now, the plan is we like Jason said, we weren't through Diamond just yet. Mm-hmm. I think we want to have a few more titles before we get there. But right now you can go online to our web store, or if you go to our website, spiro.studio, which I know that's weird to type in and not .com. It's just spiro.studio. That'll take you to like kind of like all the stuff we have. And so if you go over to Dusk, it'll take you to our web store, which is on through Gumroad. And if you want the trade paperback, you can click on it through there, and I'll put it in a box and send it to you. Mm. There, I got a whole bunch of them sitting in my room with me right now.
Okay, so. Always a good thing. Now let's ask about the future of Dusk. You've got the first six issues, and obviously there's more to come.
That's right.
Are you guys working on the second part of Dusk now, Jason, or how's this going?
Usually what we tend to do as creators is we set up our first story arc, and then we go on to another story, and then we'll follow up with the sequel to the first one or second one. What we're currently working on is it's kind of our love letter to the A-Team. We like to call it the Redneck Miami Vice. It's called Grits, and we're in the very early stages of it. I don't know if Brandon wants to really go into it too much, but that's kind of where we're at right now. And when we finish that, we're going to go ahead and do the second volume of The Kingdom. Hmm. And after The Kingdom's done, we'll go ahead and revisit Dusk for the sequel of Dusk.
Wow. So you guys are busy guys.
We're right. trying to always be, we're trying to always have a new title available whenever we go to a new convention. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to get at the point now where whenever we do visit conventions, we always have something new for patrons who might have visited us last year. Mm-hmm. Or the time before that.
So, well, I guess this is a good time to ask then. Brandon, do you know which conventions are you guys going to be going to soon?
Yes. So we're going to be at Heroes Con, which I guess when this airs, Heroes Con will be going on right around that same time.
Right.
We'll be there for that's June 16th through 18th.
Right.
And then our next convention isn't until
September.
September, we're going to be at SpaCon, which is September 22nd through 24th in Hot Springs. And then we'll be doing the Lafayette Comic Con, which I believe is – that's our hometown. So we'll be
– I think it's October 16th.
I think it's the week before that, October 9th through 10th or something like that.
All right. And you know, we live in a relatively small town, but it's a college town, and where the convention's at, it's within walking distance from the school. So there's a ton of foot traffic, and this will be the third year that they've had this particular convention, and the fire marshal literally has to come in and tell them, you know, okay, 10 more people and that's it. So it's one of those conventions that even though it's a smaller venue, we actually do really well at.
Very good.
Oh, and it's a hometown. We love seeing all the local people.
Right. Everyone knows us, and they want to hang out and give us support.
Very good, very good. Okay, so, but the website's probably the best way to get the hard paperback of it all, and then you guys are going to move forward with other projects. Which brings us to the Kingdom, which you've already mentioned, Jason. Since you are, it's a story and art by you on there, and Brendan's got a role to play in this too. We'll get to that in a minute. But talk about the Kingdom, just like Brendan talked about Dusk. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Kingdom's about?
Sure. The Kingdom is a campy adventure story. It's in the same vein as the Filmation He-Man cartoon and Thundercats cartoon, where it's got a lot of campy humor embedded into an adventure story. Mm-hmm. It takes place The main character is an albino ape named Pale, who discovers whenever he defeats an enemy, he can absorb their power. The catch is that their ghost gets attached to him. So as he's progressively getting more and more powerful, he's starting to kind of get mentally compromised by these spirits who are trying to turn him from a hero into a villain. Mm-hmm. And so you're not really sure if you're reading the origin tale of a hero or a villain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing, because as he grows, as I read one of the things I got from you guys at Comic Palooza was the trade of this, which I enjoyed reading. I thought it was great fun. I liked the adventure. You know, that's a word you don't get to say much in comics anymore. But there was a lot of adventure involved. The Pale's parents, and I use that quotes around it, and other things going on. We get to see all kinds of stuff. When we get towards the end, we get to what I consider to be a satisfying conclusion, but yet the world is such that you could go back and do more with it. So I kind of thought that was really good, Jason. Did you write this with that in mind?
Yes, I actually did. You know, it's funny. This was my first comic book, and I remember sitting on the couch thinking, you know, I want to do something. I want to make a cartoon or toys or a comic book. And at the time I realized, you know, the easiest of the three would be to make a comic book. All I really need is a pen and paper and a computer to do the actual artwork. And so that's what I decided. Went ahead and did the comic book and everything. And since I also envisioned it as a possible cartoon, I wanted it to have kind of a serial feel to it. And, after I finished the first story arc, I actually made a little roadmap for the sequel so that whenever I did get to it, I wouldn't forget the specific points that I wanted to make and questions that I wanted to answer that were kind of left unanswered in the first story arc.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brandon, what was your role in this book? Because you, according to the graphic novel here, your role, let me see if I can, story consultant. what does that mean? I mean, what did you kind of, when he had a question or wanted to know if something worked well, did Jason kind of come to you and say, do you think this works? What did you do as far as the book goes?
So Jason, he and I have been friends for a long time. We met in college, and then we hooked back up after a couple of years on Facebook. I saw he was working on some stuff, and so we sort of tried to team up to make a video game and realized we were in over our heads. And then one day he was like, hey, I think I'm going to just do a comic book. And so he started talking to me about it, and we sort of hashed out the idea of some of the plot points, the early plot points, together. And then he really ran with it after that. Mm-hmm. I kind of was like, oh yeah, maybe I could help you write it. So I think I maybe wrote the first two pages, and he took it from there. And then I think he rewrote them, but like, it was just sort of a, here's a place we can get started. And then he just took off. He did everything. So,
right. Well, my wife helped me a lot.
Right. And I think he might have felt a little guilty, and he was like, hey, we're going to do the next thing together. So,
right. Yeah. Like, well, we'll do this whole thing. We're going to do it together and have equal creator for the next book we do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I've got to ask Jason, why apes? Why did you decide to do the book in a world with apes instead of, say, humans?
You know, when I first started playing around with this idea, I had an L-shaped desk, and I was doing graphic design. And at the end of every week, I would have all these little sticky notes that I had done doodles and whatnot on. And a couple of the sticky sheets had different anthropomorphic characters on it. Mm-hmm. And this one ape that I had drawn like really stood out to me. And I was like, this feels like it's my hero. I need to kind of develop this and push it in certain directions. And I mean, apes are so similar to humans that they have both effects of being kind of familiar, but also creepy, because they're so close to us, but yet so primal at the same time. And I just found that combination to be really engaging. Mm-hmm. And also like a nice way for the reader to segue from something that felt almost human into the real bizarre and not human like other animal species.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you've already got more kingdom in mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're halfway done with the second volume right now.
Okay, which is good. Now, there's something else going on. That's the reason why we're talking and all this, is that you've got a Kickstarter going on, and it's going to end up on, let's see, Tuesday the 20th, which isn't far away, right. So people need to jump on board as quickly as they can. Why don't you talk about that, Jason?
Sure. This is something that we're super excited about. We've already made our funding goal, and now we're kind of looking into our stretch goals, but we basically spent the last 2 years developing action figures based on the characters from the comic book. So this is basically my phase two of my daydream that I had on the couch 4 years ago coming to fruition now. And these figures are sculpted by industry professionals. They've worked for Hasbro and Prime One Studios. They look amazing. Mm-hmm. They have all the modern articulation that you'd expect from a action figure today. And they're going to be made, you know, in a factory. They'll be just like a production toy that you would go to the grocery store and buy your kid a toy. It's going to be the same exact quality, same exact thing. So having this opportunity is so exciting. And if anyone's interested in checking them out, they can go into Kickstarter and search Animal Warriors of the Kingdom, and it should pull right up. Or you can even search action figures, and I think it's the second or third one from the top. So,
mm-hmm. How many figures have you got? You got one? Is it the main character? How many are there?
So our initial offering, which is getting funded now, is six toys, but each toy has removable armor, and it comes with two heads. So you could potentially create two different unique characters with each figure that you get. So even though it's only six toys, you could potentially make 12 different characters from it. It's just a little, it's just a, something that I, as a toy collector, really had wanted to do for a long time. And so it seems like the people that backed the project really enjoy that extra effort that we made.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. I got to ask you, Brandon, because you're familiar with this. Any of those figures that you like best, or which one are you the most anxious to get a hold of?
To be completely honest, the one I'm most excited about is the furthest from the goal, which we've reached the goal now, mm-hmm. but there's a stretch goal that's at the very end, and it's for the large Thane figure, the father figure. Mm-hmm. He's just such a cool, he's like more of a gorilla. He's an inch taller than the rest.
Just
looks
big,
awesome.
Yeah, he's really cool.
And if I had to pick one of the ones that's not the main character, Pale, I think his design's great, and he looks really cool. But Jason and I made a couple different videos about these figures and some figures from earlier, mm-hmm. and it's just, they're really fun to play with. It reminds me of being a kid and having similar toys. It's just a good feeling and they're super well produced. Like the prototypes that we have in so far, like I can't wait to get my hands on the real thing. So
right. I mean, just
go ahead.
Just knowing that like the prototypes feel and look as good as they do is such a nice indicator of how they're going to feel and look with an actual production unit. Mm-hmm. And the point of this line is for collectors old and new to find something new to collect. There's something really refreshing about finding a new action figure line or finding a new comic book line that doesn't have 50 or 60 years of stuff that you're trying to catch up on. It almost feels like you're watching a soap opera that you've missed the first 20 years of, and you're trying to make heads or tails of it. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about offering something to people that can experience brand new with everyone. You know, the parents can collect it with their kids and have the joy and excitement of finding which characters they like the most and mixing and matching accessories that they come with.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I got to ask, and maybe Brendan, you may have already thought about this. What about Dusk action figures? Are you guys thinking about that?
We have thought about it, and it was something that we had considered doing for the Kickstarter, mm-hmm. But it ended up just being something that was a little bit beyond the scope of what we were prepared. We wanted to make sure we got the book done, and we didn't want to have it be to where these figures might not happen. So
right.
Because I mean, the way we've written everything, the worlds don't exist apart from each other, so we could potentially put this in a phase further down the line, mm-hmm. Especially the alien that is in the Dusk. I don't want to give too much away, mm-hmm. but there are aliens, and there is one alien that would be very cool, especially
with the Thane
larger. Yeah, if that Thane figure gets unlocked,
right.
I have to say, now you've got me interested, because now it sounds like you could have a crossover. You could have the Dusk Kingdom crossover here is what you could do. The way you're talking about, they're in the same universe.
Right. Well, if you look at the Pixar theory where everything is in the same universe, and that's kind of what we like to think of.
Yeah. It wasn't intentional, but when we were talking about what's going to happen next in the kingdom, like we both realized, hey, this could be in the same thing, because there's a lot going on in Dusk, and there's a lot going on in the second thing of the kingdom. So it won't be like a crossover, but there'll be elements where if you've read everything, you could be like, hey, that's that same thing.
Very cool. Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to this stuff, because everything I've read of you guys I really like, and I can't wait to see more stuff. I can hardly believe you guys seem to be sort of new at all this. It really seems like it all pulls together real nicely, so I'm you guys are clearly good at this already.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, Brandon and I are we're fans to begin with, and I think we're also perfectionists. And so we kind of keep each other accountable. He trusts me to let him know if something, if there's some sort of plot hole, and I trust him to let me know if something looks awkward drawing or art wise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So I think having that trust and freedom to give positive critiques or constructive criticism really allows us to produce the best product that we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly shows, because I really liked both your stuff. I really like Dusk and The Kingdom, and I highly recommend, if you haven't gotten into these books, I highly recommend that you do so. Now, and of course, if you've got, you mentioned you've got several projects coming already. If we want to keep up with the stuff that you're going to do, let's start with you, Brandon. Do you have, like, social media ways that we can follow your projects and things?
Yeah, I actually just, I had been only using Twitter for Dusk promotion, but I decided to go ahead and make my own that's just about me, or so that if somebody likes what I'm doing, they can follow that. And that's the Brandon Gary, just at the Brandon Gary on Twitter. And then, you know, you can find us on Facebook. We have Spiro Studios that should link to almost all of our different projects that we're working on, and every time we come up with something new and we start working on it, we're going to do it through there. And then there's newsletters you can follow, like on the websites and on our Facebook pages. You can sign up for our newsletter, and we're not going to bug you too much. I think we've maybe sent out one email so far, so we're not going to be like LinkedIn where every day you have 15 emails.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about you, Jason? Is it something similar for you, Jason, as well?
For the Kingdom, we have Animal Warriors of the Kingdom on Facebook, and then for Instagram, we have Spiro Toys that we've been kind of posting all the progress, and I like to mix it up. I'll post Dusk and Kingdom. We just happen to have a lot of Kingdom right now because we're in the middle of this Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's just great stuff, and I hope you guys have a big celebration on Tuesday when all that money starts coming your way to help make these things happen, because they all look great, and I can't wait to read more from you guys. So you guys keep it up.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
A land ravaged by war. A young hero haunted by his past. A power-hungry ruler who will stop at nothing. A gift of unimaginable power. To save his world. Available now.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another great interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.